93.3 WMMR, Everything That Rocks. It's Nick McElwain of the Preston and Steve Show. I'm here with Sarah Parker from Jackson's Program, and we are speaking with Greg Seltzer. Greg is the founder and producer of Philly Music Fest. Greg, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you, and what we want to talk about is an event that's coming up very soon, and we want our listeners to be aware of what's happening in our area. Obviously, you say it over and over again, but it's just one of those weird years where concerts, for the most part, have stopped, but we're finding ways to provide local music and live music, and so you guys are doing that, and you're doing it this week. Can you let our listeners know a little bit about what's going on this week?
Absolutely. So Thursday, 7 o'clock, 7 to 10, and then Friday, 7 to 10:30. Philly Music Fest, as your listeners might know, is a unique music festival, even in not in 2020, as we only book bands from the Philly area, both national headliners and emerging. We usually have a four-night run in person. This year, we're pivoting to a virtual stream, but it's a little bit different than what your listeners may be used to. We're trying to be innovative. Bands are playing live on stage with a four-camera HD audio production, as opposed to the charming little acoustic kitchen and bedroom performances that we've been used to throughout quarantine. So we're doing something a little bit different, and I hope everyone tunes in.
So for the bands to be able to be up on stage together has just got to create such a happy dynamic for them, because as you've alluded to, you know, there have been a bunch of different concerts, for lack of a better term, but most of the time the bands have been in different locations, individual members have been in one spot, and now they're going to be in the same room. So is this all taking place at Ardmore Music Hall?
Exactly. All taking place at Ardmore Music Hall. In terms of logistics, we only have one band in the building at any given time. So we have two full live sets from bands on Thursday and Friday. But in between those live sets, we will have a pre-recorded set from a band to allow the Ardmore Music Hall staff to clean the stage, replace all of the equipment, get one band out and get the next band on. But those pre-recorded sets are not, you know, the Zoom box variety or in their homes. They have pre-recorded their sets on the exact same stage throughout this week. So there'll be some consistency in aesthetics, visually and audio as well.
So if you think about it, and you know, I want to use a sports analogy, the NBA, the NHL, baseball, even the NFL, they've all found ways to make their entities work, you know, and so these types of things are possible. And the bubble analogy for the NHL and the NBA in particular, they said, all right, we're going to be able to have the teams in one spot. We're going to play the games this way. We're going to provide testing. It's going to be a safe environment. And you guys have found a way to do that so that the people that are putting the concert on are safe. The bands themselves are safe. So obviously these types of things can happen and can happen in a way that the consumer can enjoy them. How difficult has it been for you to put these things together, Greg?
It's a great question. It's a grind. I'm a sports junkie, so I'm very familiar with the NBA and NHL bubbles. The one big difference between us and them, and we did take a couple things from them, which I don't know if we have time for here, but I'm happy to convey.
Sure.
We did borrow a couple concepts. But the main difference between Philly Music Fest and the NBA, well, there's certainly a great many differences between Philly Music Fest and the NBA. But one thing with our live streams that I think will make sense to people is Philly Music Fest is a nonprofit organization. The NBA is anything but a nonprofit organization. So we, Philly Music Fest, are not in the entertainment business, so to say. We do put on a music festival. I think Sarah was out to check it out last year a little bit. I like to think that it's entertaining, but ultimately what our mission is as a nonprofit is we are taking in money from the music festival and reinvesting the profits into music education for kids, because the kids that need to learn music right now are the bands that are going to be on MMR in 5 or 6 years and playing Philly Music Fest. And that's what we've identified as the key for the Philly music scene. It's great to support bands, for you guys to play them on the radio, for fans to go out and see them. It's great to support venues. They're all very important. But if we don't have the bands coming up in the scene and growing up in Philly, we are not going to have the robust local music scene that we need. So we're not in a bubble here. We're doing the best we can. We think it's going to be entertaining, but our core mission is to generate proceeds from Philly Music Fest so that we can donate them.
Nurturing the future of music is so important, like you said, and that's one of the many things that I like about this festival in particular. I was part of the Philly Music Fest last year on a panel about how to market your music. So not only does this festival have showcases so that music fans and other bands can discover new artists, but it also caters to the people behind the scenes, managers and sound engineers and promoters and radio folks like us, and it gives them a space to network and connect. So I really love that Philly Music Fest offers that. There's nothing that I can think of in this area that's quite like it.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I think our core mission is supporting the kids and getting money to music education. But we also believe that the success of our music scene is in an industry. And there's plenty of people. I don't know, Nick and Sarah, whether you guys play music or tried to play music or still play music. But there's plenty of people that are not musically inclined, but that are passionate about music that might not be in bands, but there should be a place in our music scene for everyone, managers, graphic designers, people to do posters and album art. And what one of the things Philly Music Fest, again, not our core mission, but one thing that we tried last year and we're going to try again when we're back in person is just to kind of foster a community that's already exists, but kind of bring it together. Our Philly music scene is amazing and has been for decades, but it can be a little siloed and fractured, and Philly Music Fest, as a nonprofit with no motivations, corporate motivations or otherwise, we're trying to be kind of the center in a many spokes to kind of bring the community together at least once a year to have fun, if nothing else.
Greg, I actually started taking piano lessons right down the street from Ardmore Music Hall. There's an MTC right around the corner, and my son is a really good piano player, and I started taking lessons because I wanted to do something with him. And I think you and Sarah and I, we all sort of got into this business for our collective love of music, you know, local and national, international. We love music. We love talking about music. And speaking about that, can you highlight some of the artists that are going to be a part of this festival this weekend?
Absolutely. So, again, only Philly bands are booked, but we stretch the definition of what is a Philly band. So, for example, the headliners both nights, different variations of being a Philly band, in quotes. So Japanese Breakfast is the headliner on Thursday night. She is incredible. I believe Michelle grew up in Cheltenham. She identifies as a Philly band, but yet probably even bigger nationally than she is in Philly. She's just an incredible talent as a writer and as a songwriter and a guitarist. So she's going to be on display. I believe this is her first quarantine performance. She's been writing a memoir that I believe is being published next year. So we're getting her on stage on Thursday night live. And then Friday night is Langhorne Slim, who grew up in his namesake Langhorne, but then left the Philly music scene at some point. He's played Newport Folk, he's played Bonnaroo, he's played all the big festivals, and went down to Nashville. But he has allegiance to the Philly scene, considers himself a Philly kid, and he's getting in his car and he's driving up here from Nashville. So another band that has broken out that I think you guys cover and play is Mount Joy. Mount Joy, two kids from Philly that reunited in L.A., and they're coming in to play Philly Music Fest. So that's kind of the top of the bill in terms of bigger bands. And then you have, you know, indie legends, if you will, in Philly, Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah, and The District. But one of the things that I think you see in Philly Music Fest, we are not just an indie rock festival. Our common nexus between our artists when we book it is Philly. So if you're making music in Philly, you qualify for Philly Music Fest. So that's why we have Arnetta Johnson, who is in Beyonce's touring band. She's a trumpet player. She's incredible. She's disruptive. You'll see her and her form of jazz. Arthur Thomas is a kind of relatively new funk and soul band that is going to be on Friday at 7 o'clock, I believe. And then Zeke Burst. We're going to sandwich Zeke's set between The District's and Japanese Breakfast. So the indie rock scene will get a taste of what I think is the person with probably the most incredible voice in our city right now, both substantively and audio. So tune in to see Zeke Burst, kind of an R&B soul rock mashup. So diverse all over the place. a little bluegrass, little folk, little rock, little jazz, little funk, but the common theme is music, and it's music that's made by people in Philly.
That's so cool. Yeah, some of these artists I'm familiar with, some I'm getting to know and looking forward to getting to know more. I love Langhorne Slim. Will the Law be a part of his performance as well? It's the full band?
No, he's not. He can't do the full band. He's doing a special duo set with Twain. Twain is another band that's really blowing up. So he's doing a really cool duo set with Twain that's going to be intimate, but if you know Langhorne Slim, it's not going to be quiet. But I do love the Law. I mean, that's one of the interesting things about quarantine. We hit a home run because that Japanese Breakfast and some other Philly bands are here in Philly because they're quarantining here and live here. But some of the bands had a drummer in Arizona. A band we tried to get has a band member in Australia. So not everyone was quarantining in their home site of Philly, and there were some logistical complications in putting things together. But we're doing the best we can. Again, not perfect, but we think it's going to be pretty solid.
I'm excited for Arnetta Johnson, and I love that you describe that music as disruptive, and it made me even more excited to see what she brings to the table. 2020, we've been thinking a lot about what things are going to look like after this hell of a year is over, and I'm wondering what you think the future of concerts is going to look like.
Well, that's interesting. I've been talking about that with folks in trying to put Philly Music Fest together, and you know, Sarah, it's interesting. I have no crystal ball, but like if you would talk to me in May, I would have said, no clue. I guess we're going to be watching musicians perform from their homes for the foreseeable future. But now, a couple months later, we've grown into this Philly Music Fest concept, which, by the way, is being kind of ripped off nationally now. And we're seeing a bunch of places, festivals cropping up to do this, which we think is awesome, which is kind of this live on stage, fully produced, fully sound concept. If you had to ask me, what's going to happen in 2 months from now? I think we're probably going to have limited capacity, maybe even 25% capacity in venues with a slightly elevated ticket price so that venues can make some money and musicians can make some money. And then I think that hopefully everything's under control and stays under control, and then we might get to 50% capacity. So I think it'll probably be a tranche limited capacity concept, venue by venue, city by city, depending on local restrictions. But I kind of think that's where we're headed, but nobody really knows.
Can you imagine if all of this ends up benefiting small local venues in a way that we just didn't anticipate? I mean, you know, that's the interesting thing is that there's so much adapting. There's, you know, everything is pivoting and the whole situation is fluid, of course. So we learn how to move forward and we do it again in a safe and responsible manner. But there's an audience that's craving this type of thing, Greg. So in the end, if a place like Ardmore Music Hall can benefit as a result, and I'm talking about long term, and, you know, it's been a really difficult year on a lot of different levels for so many people. But in the end, if a smaller venue can end up being a bit of a beneficiary of that, wouldn't that be an ironic twist?
I love that. I love you talking about silver lining, and which I think, by the way, is a pretty sweet Mountjoy song. But I think that's such a good point. I think what will happen is the venues that were creative and innovative will succeed and move forward. In the past, the venues were just turn the lights on and they produced the show and they kind of were going through the motions, and it was the bands and the musicians that were the creatives. But now the quarantine and the pandemic has forced venues and other people in the music industry, not just the creatives, the artists, to be innovative with their business model. And I honestly think for the musicians coming out of this, I think you're going to see a change in kind of the business of music. I really think bands have found that, wow, I have revenue streams other than Spotify, Apple Music, playing live and merch. I can actually continue these streams. Maybe when they're on tour, they can do a backstage set for a Zoom with tips. You can activate audiences around the country and not just the location that you're physically in. And I think that, you know, when we're all back to normal going to shows, I think you're going to see some revenue streams that are really dialed in, really done well, that are remnants of this kind of terrible period for all of us. I think they're going to have some benefit. And real quick, if I can, Sarah, back to Arnetta Johnson. I'm a huge fan. I think I just want people to check her out. And I've had people look at the lineup of Philly Music Fest this year and said, hey, Greg, I think you made a mistake. You have Arnetta Johnson playing both nights. And I said, that's not a mistake. She is playing both nights. And it's a 20-minute set one night. and it's a 25-minute set the next night, and people are like, well, why are you doing that? Nobody else is playing both nights. And it's like, well, if for some reason someone tunes in Thursday and then not Friday, they're not going to see Arnetta Johnson. I need everyone to see Arnetta Johnson. So we're almost force-feeding our core indie rock crowd and your core crowd. We're almost force-feeding a little quick 20-minute dose of disruptive Arnetta Johnson jazz. So can't wait for that.
Well, here's the thing. All of this music connects and intersects in different ways. I just thought of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, whose music is really rooted in jazz. I know Flea is a huge jazz guy. So, you know, you come to this with an open mind and maybe you'll become a fan of someone like Arnetta Johnson, where before you came to the Virtual Music Festival because you were a fan of, say, the Districts. I love the variety.
Cool. Yeah, I do too. And I think when people turn in, it's more 4/4. Rock type of jazz fusion anyway. So I really dig it. And I think, I think the Districts and Clap Your Hands Say Yeah and Mountjoy, Langhorne Slim, Jazz, they anchor the lineup. But I kind of suspect that people are going to come away saying, man, Arnetta Johnson's good. Man, Zeke Burst is super, super fun. I got to check that person out. So that's really what I love about Philly Music Fest. We normally have 24 bands or so that play the festival over the four nights. So this is skinny down at 7, but we're hoping there's still some music exploration for people.
It's funny, Greg, because Sarah's thinking about jazz and I was thinking about beer. And the reason I was thinking about beer was that Philly has such a wonderful beer scene. And really the phrase that comes to mind is rising tides raise all ships. When the one beer does well and it helps to raise the profile of another beer and the local breweries all support one another. And I feel that it's often the same case when it comes to local music and local venues, too. And so it's really cool to see all of these bands stepping up to be a part of Philly Music Fest. Give the bands again one more time, Greg, so our listeners are aware of who's going to be performing this weekend.
Sure, absolutely. So Thursday night is Japanese Breakfast, and the Districts will be playing full live sets. You also have Zeke Burst playing on Thursday night and Arnetta Johnson playing on Thursday night. Starts at 7 p.m., you can go to the watch page on phillymusicfest.com. There's several sources to watch it, including NPR and WXPN. And then on Friday night, you have the headliner of Langhorne Slim. You have Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah. You have Arnetta Johnson showcased again. And then you have Arthur Thomas bringing his rock, funk, soul, kicking off at 7 p.m. Tons of places to stream this online. So the watch page on phillymusicfest.com. And again, no ticket sales, no merch this year. So if you like what you see, if you want to support kids' music education and musicians that are impacted by COVID, drop us a Venmo at Philly Music Fest or donate through the website.
Yeah, live local music for a great cause, obviously. Greg Seltzer, the founder and producer of Philly Music Fest, thanks so much for coming on with me and Sarah on 93.3 WMMR.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.